So, nicht das hier war unsere, hoffentlich merken wir das, unsere ich könnte auf Deutsch eigentlich Sequenzenliege sagen, nicht? Aber wir kennen es gesagt, wenn man mal Sequenz, wie man bei Klinien nachlesen kann. Also das ist unsere Sequenzenregel für ja, Modallogik, genauer gesagt. Nicht?
Warum so für Deutsch?
Achso, wir sprechen ja gar nicht. Warum müssen die Deutschen protestieren? Okay, so this is our sequent rule, so I don't have to actually have to wonder whether it's sequence or sequent. Well, in English it's sequent, but the actual translation of the German word would be sequence, because in the German original text it's actually Sequenz, as in sequence, but the guy who introduced it into English scientific literature probably justifiably decreed that the word sequence was already overused in English mathematical texts, so people preferred the word sequent. So this is our sequent rule for, well, we wrote box. Let's introduce an alternative name for the K to make clear that this rule works for one specific flavor of modal logic, namely K, the modal logic of all Kripke frames. Okay. We have already seen correctness. Basically, that was the last thing we did in last week's Q&A session. So it remains to prove completeness. Completeness in this case isn't going to be terribly hard, just as it wasn't terribly hard for the propositional case, of which this is an extension, and the sequence system for K, I mean all the propositional rules plus this one. If we recall how the propositional case proceeded, this was just via induction on the number of connectives in the sequent in that sense. And we see here that the same principle will apply, right? So the number of connectives decreases going from top to bottom, as observed last time already for the Sandwich proof, which actually used the same principle. And well, I have to be a bit careful, right? This n can be zero, so as we observed, the one connective of which we can be sure that it disappears is this one. Right, so our induction is just on the size of the sequence. So, I've said on occasion that every classical proof of completeness would proceed by first reducing the validity of a logical conclusion to unsatisfiability of a set of formulas or some formula, and then proving that everything that is consistent is satisfied. Here I would like to deviate from this principle, as I think we did for the completeness proof of propositional logic, or the sequent calculus for propositional logic. So we'll just proceed by contraposition, right? So write it like this, well, I'm not going to write it like this. So we assume that this sequent here, so some given sequence, gamma and tails delta, is not derivable, and we show that then it is not valid. So notice that what we prove here is weak completeness, that is, we take a finite syntactical object, one sequent, and show that it's not valid, it's not derivable. Stronger proofs of completeness, which would actually work for K, but we won't do that here, will actually show satisfiability of infinite consistent sets of formulas, which is a stronger result. So, we have to do something with our knowledge that this sequent here is not derivable. Well, not derivable means not derivable by any of the rules. Okay, so we'll now make a distinction on a case distinction on whether or not our target sequence still contains propositional connectors. Alright, so if it still contains a propositional connective somewhere, then it will be the case that one of the propositional rules applies. Because the propositional rules are built in such a way that whenever I actually still find a propositional connective somewhere in the sequent, one of the rules will apply. So either I find one on the left, then I can, since I have a negation on the left, then I can apply the left negation rule, or if I find a conjunction on the right, then I can apply the right conjunction rule. Whatever I find, I can apply a root. And I'll just do one example and leave out all the others. Let's do the most complicated one. Wait, which one is the most complicated one? So, the right rule for conjecture, let's just say this one. So, this rule is applicable to our system, say, I'll switch the names now if you don't mind. So I'll stick to gamma and delta and just reuse it. I mean, this is all a big induction, so this was here remember. So, this was the rule, right? We conclude gamma entails phi and psi or delta from gamma entails phi or delta and gamma entails psi or delta. Okay, this rule is applicable, but this isn't provable. Well, so this rule here doesn't give us a proof of the sequence down here. This means that either one of these must fail to be provable. That was of generality, I picked one of them because evidently the situation is totally symmetric. So, well, that was of generation. We've done this already, right? So, I mean, I'm repeating stuff here. This kind of argument appeared in exactly that form in our completeness proof of the propositional part, right? It's just that it reappears here. So, without loss of generality, this is not derivable. It's a smaller sequence, so by the induction hypothesis, It's not well. Well, if not even this is valid, then all the less is this stronger claim going to be valid, because this has the stronger formula phi and psi in place of phi. Right? So. Right. So this was the most complicated rule, because it had two premises that I had to say without loss of generality once, so I didn't have to do that for the other ones. Okay, so that takes care of this case. So as soon as some propositional rule applies to the C-target sequence, that is, as soon as it contains at least one propositional connective, we're done. Let's assume that there's no propositional stuff, well, discounting propositional atoms, left in gamma and delta. Well, what can there be left? Well, propositional atoms, as I said, and of course, boxes. Right, so our target sequence, gamma and delta, has this form here. It has some propositional atoms on the left, then some boxes on the left, then some boxes on the right. I've used N, K, and M, and I've left R. Okay, and that has some atoms on the right. So that's our sequence is going to look. And we can say something about the atoms that occur here. If I take the ones on the left, and compare them to the ones on the right, well, there's no atom that can appear on both the on the left and on the right, because otherwise the sequence would be provable, right, using the axiom. And we've assumed that the sequence is not true. So no atom occurs both on the left and on the right. Okay, so now we have quite a number of possible rule applications that we could use to prove this sequence. Namely, well, what does a rule application do? Let's check again. A rule application picks some of the boxes on the left-hand side and one box on the right-hand side and removes them. But evidently, there's no point in attempting any proof where I don't pick all of the boxes on the left-hand side. Because, I mean, picking all of the boxes on the left-hand side is something that I can do, and the sequence that I get, that I need to prove after that, is weaker than the one that I get if I take only some of the boxes here, right? So, so without loss of generality, we can restrict the way we apply our rule K. To a complex gamma, so the stuff that I leave out basically, not containing any boxes. That's one way of saying I always want to include all boxes left mode. Stick to writing this with S each of premises. So premises are possible applications of rule K. We can just list them. So what do they do, right? They drop the context, that is our propositional atoms, and whichever ones of the boxes we don't pick in the rule application on the right. And they drop all the boxes. So they look like this. They have all of phi 1 up to phi k on the left, and one of the psi I on the right. So that's I ranging from 1 to m. Derivable, none of these premises can be derivable, because otherwise we could precisely derive our conclusion from it. And of course, in this at this point, our induction hypothesis applies and gives us that they're not valid. Because they're not valid, we have the following. Each of these is not valid, which means there's a model that doesn't satisfy it. And actually, to be just a counter model for this thing, it's going to be a counter model that's a finite tree. So now I jump to strengthening my inductive hypothesis on the fly, so of course I'll assume that our inductive hypothesis really gives us not only that we have counter models for all these things, but that these counter models are actually finite trees. So, well, what's a counter model? A counter model is something that satisfies phi 1 up to phi k, but not psi I. So here we have a model. It's a finite tree, which I sort of depict like this, triangle. And this thing here satisfies phi 1 up to phi k and psi 1. Counter model for our first of these non-derivable sequences. And of course, this goes on. And here at the end, we have a counter model for the last one, which satisfies phi 1 up to phi k and psi 1 is index n. Right, and now using these, I have to build a counter model to my original sequence, which we still see up there in the second line. So what do we do? Well, first of all, we have to ensure that all these box formulas on the left hold, because I'm constructing a counter model to that sequence, so I have to make everything on the left true, and everything on the right false.
These are counter models, shouldn't it be not Oh, not, there's a not, let's left. Right. Not. Okay. So I have to make everything on the right false and everything on the left true. Well, I introduce a new node. Okay, I make P1 up to PN true, obviously. And, well, don't write anything else, meaning I make Q1 up to QR false, which is automatic if I regard, if I follow the convention that these are the positive atoms that are listed are the only ones that are true. And looking at the third line there, which tells us if I make Pi1 up to Pi N true and nothing else, then I haven't made any of the Q1 up to QR true. Okay, and now I have to falsify all these boxes on the right-hand side. So the boxes say all successors satisfy psi I. So to make that false, I have to ensure that there is one successor that doesn't satisfy psi I. Well, I've got these candidates sitting here, so I'll just make them all successors of my new node. That certainly makes the right-hand side, everything on the right-hand side false now. Well, I should go back that everything on the left-hand side is true, that is that all these boxes, box phi I, that they are now true. Well, but phi 1 up to phi k are in all my m successors that I've just created, so all the box formulas are true. So this here satisfies box phi 1 up to box phi k, and not box psi 1 up to not box psi n. So it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's a counter model to my original sequence there. And that is really all. Questions?
Well, first you thought about Q1 to QR, that is the
question. Well, I mentioned that from the beginning. Yeah, of course, so this should be, okay, this here actually depicts the model, and this is a comment about the model and what is satisfying there and what isn't, so yes, you're right, so, let's add it anyway, so this, so, right, everything in square brackets is a comment about what holds in the model, and this part here is actually part of the picture.
And did we prove soundness?
Yeah, we proved soundness last time, yes, last time. Right. So observe that what we see here is how a failed attempt at searching for a proof will basically represent a model. So if we try to prove this thing here, right, well, not this, the original sequence, right, then we will go through all these rule matches here and try to prove each and every one of these, and apparently we will fail. And this failed proof attempt by induction gives us these models, and then by putting them all together, we find a model for a counter model for the original sequence. So basically, if we keep a record of our failed proof attempt, we've basically drawn a model, and that is actually in the exercise, right? So when there's one exercise precisely that, well, two actually, that asks you to conduct a proof search that fails and to extract out of that failed proof search a counter model for the false. That works exactly in this way. Okay. So this calculus has all the good properties that we've seen for our original propositional calculus. So 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 for instance, weakening is admissible. Well, there's nothing new at all that happens in the proof because, the rule originally looked like this, right? Forget about gamma and delta for a moment. That was how the rule originally looked. And then once one has written that down, one remembers, hey, I want the calculus to satisfy weakening. Well, it won't if I just include this rule, so I just include it artificially in that rule by allowing to write arbitrary junk to the left and right of the formulas that actually matter. So weakening is basically built into this rule, and of course all the other rules are unchanged and will just allow you to hand the context down from the premise to the conclusion. What else? Inversion of the propositional rule survives. Actually, that doesn't even really look at the other rules. Contraction survives. Well, contraction requires, I'm not going to do this proof now, but contraction requires looking at this rule here and wondering what happens when I identify two of these boxes, for instance. So if I have box phi 1 and box phi 2 and phi 1 and phi 2 happen to be the same, for instance, well, the rule will still apply because I can also contract the formulas here. Right, so this goes through the induction as well. So contraction works. And, well, this I'll just regard as proof once I write it down. Right? The proofs are totally meaningless unless you see the principle of how this kind of stuff is proved. You'll be hopefully immediately able to do it for this new extended calculus. Well, another thing that we've shown using induction over such a sequent calculus is interpolation. For interpolation, something new will actually happen here in the treatment of this rule. If we have time at the end, I'll go into this briefly, but I'll do the other stuff first because there's no interpolation exercise on the sheet, so defer that basically. Caps is admissible, for instance, by the same wholesale argument that we've seen in the propositional case, but just because the calculus doesn't have caps and is complete, right? So caps is admissible because it's a sound rule. Okay, so that's some properties of the calculus. We've seen examples last time, right? So I can now move on to something else that we need for the sheet, namely the version of the calculus for S4. So necessarily this must be different, right? I mean, it's no surprise that the rules for S4 are going to be different because we know that there are sequences that are valid in S4 but not in K, right? So hopefully there's going to be rules that prove more stuff. So I hope I now design these rules. So let's see. I mean, I should be able to take them from the literature, but just googling them yields diverse and hard to classify stuff, so I'm sure it's in there somewhere, so I'm not claiming to have invented it. Of course not. But I didn't invent it, but I made it up, basically. Right, so let's check. So first of all, we have the t-axiom that we need to take care of. So recall that the t-axiom is reflexivity, right? So box A implies A. Everything that is necessarily true is also actually true. And on the side of the models, this corresponds to reflexivity of the frame. The current world is one of its relational successors. So if all the relational successors satisfy some formula, then in particular, the current world will. Okay, so we somehow have to reflect this property in the calculus by producing a suitable sequent rule. So this rule, I will show slightly later actually, and I'll show you the other one first, because the other one looks more like our original K rule. So let's first recall the other axiom. So the other axiom was box A implies box box A. Everything that is necessarily true is necessarily true. Well, because that is the 4 axiom, the rule is also going to be called 4. So for each of the axioms, there is one rule. Slightly strange, but well, I won't waste time explaining to you why it's a bit strange, but it is. So, same conclusion as our form. So basically, it shows something about the successors of the node that I described here, right? The successors are described here and the original node is described here. So something holds as the successors, that's what happens here, right? So the successors all satisfy if phi 1 and phi n hold, then phi 0 holds, and from this I conclude some formula that expresses this in terms of what I can see from here, right? So basically this is the picture that one has about this. So something holds up here, and I conclude that some relation between boxes holds down here, at this point that I can see these elements. And now this will be exactly the same here, except the premise of the rule will look different. So this rule, I mean, this is just the K rule copied, to change it slightly in a moment. So this rule remains sound, of course, the gamma doesn't have anything to do there. So this is just the K rule, of course, because S4 is a superset of K, the rule remains correct. So I should include this rule here somehow in my system, if indirectly. And, well, this here says that what does it say? It's not so hard to see directly. I'll just do it instead of watching some motivation. So I'll change the rule by putting boxes on all, by basically leaving the boxes on all the phis on the left hand side. So this makes sense in connection with this rule here. So this axiom here. This axiom says that some boxed formula is stronger than the unboxed formula. So if I put it on the left, right, so this basically means that this left-hand side, the assumption of my sequent, they're stronger. So the sequent itself is weaker because it has stronger stuff on the left-hand side. And that makes the whole rule in turn stronger because it has a weaker premise. Okay. And now, of course, this will only make sense in connection with the T rule, which actually tells me that boxes really are stronger than unboxed formulas. So, and now something different happens, right? So, now, I make use of the fact that one of the guys up here is actually the guy down here. And the rule looks like this. So it tells me that if I want to prove something from a box, then, well, from the box I in particular get the unboxed functor. So it tells me in that proof I can add the unboxed formula on the left-hand side, which, looking at this axiom here, just tells me, well, I can add a formula to my assumptions that follows from my assumptions anyway. Okay. And now this this rule, of course, shows me that, so here, first of all, notice that I am keeping the context here. Here, the context is dropped, as for the original cable. That is because basically the context lives down here. The gamma and the delta, well, gamma and not delta, I should say, in counter models, whatever. Gamma and delta live down here, and if I move to some other state, they're lost. But there is one of them to which I move where they're not lost because it's actually the same. And that is exactly what happens in this room. Okay, and now I see that this rule, the 4 down here, really has a weaker premise than the K rule, because now, once I'm here, I can add phi 1 up to phi n to my premise on the left using the T rule. So my proof obligation, the thing that I have to prove in order to prove my target sequence down here, will actually contain properly more formulas than in the case of the K rule. Namely, it will contain phi 1 up to phi n and their boxed versions. So that's easier to prove than proving it with less stuff on the left-hand side. Okay, so these are my rules.
The idea is that we are replacing K dots with combination of 4 and T, or we are keeping all three. We have K, T,
and No. This is, I was hoping my argument that I just gave showed that K is actually derivable from 4 and T. Well, 4, T, and we can.
But if one wants to obtain a system just for 4 without T, then.
Then we'd have to add in these formulas manually, I think. I have a rule somewhere on my computer that does this, or actually in the published paper. So this explicitly works for S4 and not for K4. So, first of all, we'd like to see that these rules actually derive the right formulas. And, well, which formulas would be good examples? Well, maybe the axioms that we've started from, right? So it would be good to see that these rules actually prove these two formulas here. Let's first see that these rules prove axiom T. Tell me how axiom T is proved from this. So I'll start, do the top down, right? So we start with this, then. Yeah, we imagine an implication rule as introduced in the last cheat, right? So what's an implication rule? So the box gets pushed to the left of the turnstile. Now what do I do?
By T rule.
by the T rule. So what do I do by the T rule?
I get A on the left side.
And whilst we write in A on the left side, now so T is proved, very good. And next, let's check that axiom 4 is proved. Well, I'll omit the first step, which runs exactly the same way. It's an implication, so shift the antecedent to the left. So what do I do?
Times
4. Okay, let's see. So 4 tells me I can pick a box on the right and remove it and keep all boxes on the left, right? So I keep this one, I remove this one. Right. Now of course, you said 2 times, which is correct, right? We do it another time. Like this, right? And now?
T.
And of course, now your exit case. So, of course, this here, from here on, the argument just serves to show that non atomic axioms are also provable, right? So, that's how this works. So, just put this part here in bracket because it would belong to a different proof where we say that the generalized axiom rule basically is derived. Okay, so this proves what we want to prove apparently. So the system derives the formulas that that we expect it to derive. So this doesn't, of course, yet prove completeness. Right. But we do that next. Okay, we should now also prove sounds, right? But I think I sort of argued sounds already. Yeah? So we show soundness over S4 frames. Rule by rule, first the T rule. So for the T rule, I can actually show it locally, which is a stronger form of soundness. So the T rule is even locally sound. So I just give myself a state W and a model M that satisfies the premise, and that also satisfies the left-hand side of the conclusion, so gamma in box phi. I have to show that, my state satisfies, well, I should be clear right here, so this should be the conjunction of the left-hand side of my target sequence, so the big conjunction of gamma and box phi. I have to show that M and W satisfy the big disjunction of the right-hand side. Correct? So it suffices because we assume that W satisfies this sequence up here, that W satisfies the left-hand side of that sequence, because then the disjunction of delta will follow. So it suffices to show that M and W satisfies conjunction of gamma and box phi and phi, well, almost all of which is already here except the phi. This is what remains to be shown, that M, W actually satisfies phi and that. But that follows from two things, namely M, W satisfies box phi on the one hand, because it satisfies this conjunction here. And W is in relation to itself because it's an S4 frame. Okay, that was T. And 4. So for 4 I have to be more careful because 4 is not locally valid, only at the level of model validity. So I have to assume a model that satisfies the premise and then show that the model also satisfies the which is weaker. I'll be even more generous and just assume that the premise is valid. And I have to show that the conclusion is valid, so in this case I just give myself some statement model, M, W, which satisfies the left-hand side of this. So it satisfies, well, it should be precise, but this is, satisfies the conjunction of gamma and the conjunction of all these formulas box phi on. Okay, and I have to show that the right hand side, the disjunction of the right hand side is satisfied, so I'll assume that delta is not satisfied, so that allows me to add this basic, well, basically apply the negation rule and shove the delta over to the left-hand side, so only one thing left on the right-hand side. So now I definitely have to show that box phi 0 is satisfied. And what do I do? Well, I have to show that a box formula is satisfied, so I give myself an arbitrary successor of W.
to V. And just to know where we are, what do we have to show? Well, we have to show V satisfies phi 0. Because we're showing box phi 0. Well, looking at our premise, it suffices to show that V satisfies box phi I for I ranging from 1 to n. But because we're in an S4 frame, well, what do we have to show here? We have to show that all successors of V satisfy phi I. But all these successors are also successors of W, right? So it suffices to show that W satisfies these box of phi, well, but that we have assumed. Okay, that was samples. So now we prove completeness. Completeness will be pretty much like the one for K, but of course with some subtle twists, because now we have to construct a model with more structure. Right? So the model has to be an S4 model. It has to be reflexive and transitive. And of course the model that we constructed for K wasn't. So we proceed as the last time, and this time I will avoid the notational mistake that I made in the proof for K, namely wasting precious notational material on this claim. So I'll just say the target sequence without giving it a name is unprovable. And then show that it's not that. So now, of course, unprovable means not provable by applying the rules in any order. But for convenience, I do something that is regularly done in proofs of this kind, and that is I'll normalize the proof search. So that is, I'll restrict the proof search, the proof system, I'll give you rules as to when you're allowed to apply a rule and when you aren't. Of course, I have to justify this. I have to show that this doesn't actually weaken the system. I can still prove everything that I was able to prove before. Well, I'll give you the restriction now.
So I'll restrict to a strategy of proof search where you apply the propositional rules and the T rule exhaustively before you attempt to apply for. And I'm claiming that's without loss of generality. Now, of course, one would need to sit down and prove that this is without loss of generality. But notationally, it gets it to be a pain because the sequence changes its structure a lot, and you have to give new names to everything that happens. But basically, you see it when you just squint a little. So what happens? I'm not showing the propositional rules here. The propositional rules, only harmless stuff happens anyway. And well, what happens with T? Well, T just tells me I close my left side of the sequent under removing boxes. So whenever I have something boxed in it, I add the formula that's under it. Of course, that may mean I have to apply the propositional rules again, right? Because what comes under a box might have propositional connectives. So this phi here might be something like A and B, or so I would have to apply the left-hand AND rule and stuff like that. So just apply all the rules exhaustively until none of them apply. And I have to wonder if I thereby destroy any possibility of applying this rule. Well, evidently I don't, because I never remove any boxes. Right? The propositional rules will just create new boxes. Then all they remove are propositional connectives that possibly sit on top of boxes. So the propositional rules, in fact, will only ever uncover boxes. They will never destroy ones that are already there. And the T rule also doesn't remove the box. I mean, it removes a box to get this formula here, but it leaves the formula, the original box formula, there. So if there was a matching of this rule before adding this formula, there will be one after. I mean, clearly, this is a bigger sequence than down there, right? So everything that applies to this sequence will also apply to this sequence. So that's this hand-waving argument why this restriction is clearly without loss of generality. It doesn't actually restrict the system. So, and it's just for presentation anyway, so I could connect the proof of that. All right, so what happens? Right, what have I gained by this? I want to conduct my usual argument that the sequent decreases when going from conclusion to the premise. But of course now that's no longer true. So that's the trick. Well, look at this, right? I actually add formulas to the sequence without removing anything. Now, of course, I do this only locally, right? So it's clear that this thing here, exhaustively applying the propositional rules of T, this will terminate. Because basically there's only so many boxes I can remove, right? So this will only ever add formulas to the left-hand side of the sequence that I could basically already see beforehand. It only ever adds sub-formulas of the original sequence to the left-hand side. So this step will clearly terminate, but of course it happens every time again once I apply this for rule here. So we need another termination measure. And in fact, then strictly speaking, the system will not terminate. So for instance, look at this formula here. So say? Well, this this formula here, without the box, just says there is a successor. And then here, I add a box in front of it and say, well, every successor of where I am currently, which means immediately and unboundedly far into the future because the relation is transitive, there will always be successors. So this really should be read always. There will always be successors. And I add the not in front of it just to basically convert between the satisfiability and the validity problem. So this formula here is clearly satisfiable. So this one here is not going to be valid. And it's clear. I can immediately draw a model. Here is a very simple one, right, that satisfies box diamond true. So searching for a proof of this formula will fail. Well, let's check what happens. Right? So I translate this out. So this becomes turn not true into false. So box true is not, diamond true is not diamond false. So let's try and prove it. Well, negation rules to the left. Now, all I can do really is apply the box rule, or well, I can apply the T. Okay. Having done that, I can now push this to the right hand side. Now something weird happens. I can, of course, apply the T-rule again. So let's keep track of what happened. This was T, and here's another application of the T-rule. So I'm still exhaustively applying propositional rules of T. You can see here that I'm running in circles. Right? So next I move this to the right. And okay, I want to see this all modulo contraction, right? So I get a formula on the right that was already there, so basically this leads back to this one. Right? Okay.
So when I'm trying to kill, you are not killing box bot on the right hand side, right?
Oh, there's of course. Okay, so this basically is where I end up. So I need to have some definition of the stabilizing process. So basically, I am now in a situation where I can apply the T rule, but applying it exhaustively, applying it together with exhaustively together with the other rules will always lead back to the sequence. Okay. So now this is now one where I, having done this calculation here, I can I'm allowed by a proof strategy to apply the for rule finally. So from here, using the for rule, I go to what? I can remove the box on the right hand side. So that's how it looks. So, bottom on the right-hand side is something that I can just remove, right? Because the right-hand side is disjunctive, so having box, having bottom on the right-hand side is like having nothing on the right-hand side. Okay, now, where am I? Okay, now, in principle, I have progressed one step in my model, or backwards, actually. So, now, next, I would apply the tube. Basically, with one more application of the negation rule, arrive here. So I've run this circle. And of course, just going on like that will not terminate unless I somehow detect this. So now at this point, of course, a human reader of the whole thing will have discovered that proof search fails. Right? Because, well, if there was any proof, we would have had to have found it by now. I mean, this leads us back to where we started. If in a labyrinth we get back to a place where we've already been and there are no other ones, then we're going to conclude that there's no way out of the labyrinth. Right? And just sit down and get drunk. So this diagram here really shows that proof search fails. But if we want to program this in the computer, we have to get the computer to remember where he's been, so to speak. So we have to analyze what happens in terms of box formulas that we have on the left-hand side. And the point of the system is when we look at the for rule, which is now English behind us, the for rule more or less tells us that on the left-hand side, the boxes never vanish. Well, the t-rule will also never take them away. So here's an observation about the system, right? Whenever I have a boxed formula on the left-hand side of the turnstile, it will remain there in all eternity. There is no rule that will ever allow me to get rid of the box on the left-hand side of the turnstile. I briefly have to think whether I'm missing something here, and possibly there might be a rule that moves a box from the left-hand side of the turnstile to the right-hand side, but looking through the system, one will find that there isn't, right? Nothing will ever move a box formula from left to the right. So once I have a box here, it will stay.
Of course, you mean box and outermost letter.
Box, but by a box formula, I mean a formula that starts with a box. And also looking at the rules again. So let's A here. This here should make clear what I mean by T and all propositional rules. Exhaustively applied, that means I apply T and then apply all the propositional rules, and if that leads to something I've already seen, then I stop. So that was my first part here. And the second observation is box formulas on the left, they never go away. And it's actually done. Second. Second, only subformulas of the target sequence never appear. That's by the structure of the rules, right? The propositional rules will only ever introduce formulas searching backwards that were already subformulas of the target sequence, so we only have to look at T and 4, and yes, one glance tells us, yep, everything that appears on top can also be seen on the bottom. So, this now tells us that if we suitably block the proof search, that is, if we dissect and try to detect whether we run into a cycle, then the proof search will terminate. So
Crusoe terminates if I use blocking. That is, if I try to detect silence. So blocking, I think, is strictly a term from the dual world where you do so-called tableau calculi that basically turn everything, stand everything that we do here on its head. Right? So just so if you read papers on how DL provers are implemented, etc., you will read a lot of stuff about blocking and various strategies of blocking, forms of blocking, and how long it takes to detect it, etc. Okay, so it will terminate, namely, well, what can happen? In the proof search, going backwards basically, I will keep adding boxes to the left-hand side. So boxes keep popping up. And when a box pops up, then of course I can have a properly new application of this for rule here, right? If there's new boxes appearing on the left-hand side, then all of a sudden I can have a proper new application of this thing. So how often can new boxes appear on the left? At most, by these observations. By one of these observations, I get an estimate on how often new boxes can appear on the left.
When you're speaking of this observation, it's also mentioning that one requires some comment. Maybe you did it verbally and I did not notice, but it's not written down. It can happen that box formulas will disappear, but this is a suboptimal application of for rule, right? If the box formula is part of this gamma.
Ah, right, yeah. So I stick to the old restriction on the for rule, like for the cable, right? So the so I'll write this on the rule, actually. So as before, I restrict to the case where there are no boxes left over a gamma. And then, yes, so of course, yeah, with some ill-advised application where I do drop some boxes, I could let boxes get away. But then, of course, the termination is even quicker, right, because I arbitrarily make the target sequence smaller. It doesn't help me because I still have to pursue the other branches. But.
Wait, is it safe to impose this in the rule itself? Because then if you want to derive some formulas which have redundant box premises,
I think that should be safe. I mean, if I have, what's going to happen is that in the end, when I reach the leaves, I have extraneous boxes sitting around that I would like to get rid of, but because all the propositional rules and the axiom rules don't care, I don't think that's a problem. So in the end, what I do is I just extract my content here from all the boxes and process it using the propositional rules, and doesn't hurt you. How often can new boxes pop up?
Amount of boxes in the original target sequence?
Yeah.
Maybe some small, because if you have
because I've hung you around, then I put up a camera in touch. Well, something which can be calculated originally.
Yeah. I mean, the original answer was right to answer as many box formulas as there are box subformulas in my original formula, and as a rough estimate, linearly no. Because there can be as many boxed formulas, as many boxed subformulas in the target sequence as there are subformulas in the target sequence, and the number of subformulas of the target sequence is just its size. Right. So. Of new boxes along a branch of the proof search. And well, the question is, how long does it possibly take me to uncover this? Well, what do I do in between? A new box can appear in a variety of ways. It can appear either by applying the propositional rules, for instance, moving some negation from the right to the left, which happened to be a negated box, that will introduce a new box on the left-hand side. Or I could unpack another box from an already boxed formula using the T rule, or I could somehow uncover the box here, so maybe this phi zero here somewhere contains a box, which I can then move across possibly to the left-hand side. So basically, I just apply these rules and thereby unpack my box, which is somehow deep inside a formula. And these unpacking steps, each step will remove one connective above my box that I want to unpack. And again, there's at most linearly many things above my box that I have to remove. So. Unpacking a box, I mean, there's this unfortunate comparison or metaphor in the background. It means that what I unpack and hold in my hand at the end is the box, not that I open the box, right? Uncover the box. Uncover is better than unpack. So, all in all, this tells me that the length of a branch is at most quadratic. Right? That new box formulas appear on the left linearly many times, and doing each of these uncovering one box will take me linear time. And once I've uncovered all the possible boxes, I cannot proceed, so that's quadratic length for each of the branches. But, so we're not actually currently, well, we can put it at the end actually. So our main target at the moment anyway is to prove completeness. So for completeness, all we really know, or need to know, is that proof search terminates. Because this gives us a new measure of induction. So that's, I don't actually think that's widely known. So as soon as I've proved that proof search in a system terminates, I can use that to prove completeness by induction, because now I have a new induction measure. I can do induction on the time it takes to finish a proof search on a sequence. Because whenever I apply a rule backwards, and I assume I will have a successful proof search on that thing, basically, well, I conduct proof search on it at all, right, then that proof search must finish more quickly than for the original one, because I've already taken one step. So, for the propositional rules and also for T, I mean, this is now dead obvious, right? I just take one step backwards, apply the induction hypothesis, and everything basically goes exactly as before. Well, for T, I have to observe that the premise of the T rule is actually semantically equivalent to the conclusion of the T rule. So nothing happens here. The only place where anything happens is the forward. The for rule is happily still there, although I can't push it further up. So let's look at it and remember how it looks. So I'll do this part more quickly now, do it like in the K-proof. So like in the K-proof, basically, I imagine that nothing in terms of propositional rules applies to my target sequent anymore, so I have only boxes and propositional atoms sorted to the right and left, and that gives me exactly in the same way some possible rule premises, one premise basically for each box that I find on the right. And the premises now, they look slightly different because I remove the box only on the right. So the premises are of this form. I think this was K1. Where I goes from 1 to N. So using otherwise the same notation as in the completeness proof for K. So the only difference is that now the boxes remain on the left-hand side of the sequence. So these are now not valid by the induction hypothesis. So let's concentrate why this is, right? We know that proof search on these fails, because if it would succeed, then it would succeed also for a target sequence. And it fails in shorter time, because I'm basically a step on the way. I mean, we've already taken one step for each of these, at least one step. So, this proof search fails, and it does so in shorter time. So, by the induction hypothesis, these things are not valid, so we get countermodes. Again, these countermodes look almost the same as before, except now they have boxes here, right? Box 4, 5, 1, 2, 5, K, and last one, and they get the negated right-hand sides because they're countermodes. Now, same notation, I have here my P1 up to Pn, and of course implying not Q1 up to Qr, so the propositional atoms dealt with exactly in the same way as before. Okay, now if we build a model, But of course, just making these guys here successors of this point will not cut it. Because I have to build a transitive one and a reflexive one. So I have to make this one a successor and I have to make every successor of this guy, so every point in this tree, I have to make a successor of my new root state to ensure transitivity. Okay, and well, now I have to actually prove that this guy does his job. So, of course, it does so in the sense that it violates all the boxes on the right. So it satisfies not box psi 1 up to not box psi n, right? Because, well, for instance, this guy here is a successor of the root node. It satisfies not psi 1. So it this here doesn't satisfy box. So good. The more difficult bits are the positive ones. So why does this guy here satisfy box phi I? Well, of course its direct successors, as I've drawn them here, they all satisfy box phi I well, because of course these guys will, if they satisfy box phi something, box phi I, then they will also satisfy phi I, because this is a reflexive frame. Then there's the guy sitting further down here. But they of course will also satisfy phi I. Why? Well, picking out some random guy here, I mean, this will satisfy any formula phi I, because he's a successor of this local root node here, and this guy satisfies box phi I. So all these successors down here do satisfy all formulas under the boxes, phi. And then there's the thing that we have to pay attention to. Not only did we make everything down here a successor of the root node, we also made the root node a successor of itself. And
be careful.
So this should not be obvious. Yeah, we were already over time, so we need to just cut it, but yeah.
This is a better translation of the upper and these two terms, it should work.
Okay, we'll look at it. Okay, yeah, fine. So we have to leave the gap here and close this tomorrow. And the other thing we're going to vote on tomorrow is basically discuss the first cheat, which I will by then hopefully have completed. See you.